look at what are the habits and behaviors that have caused me to gain the weight in the first place, and am I addressing them? Because if you have a habit of, you know, getting takeaway twice every weekend on a Friday and a Saturday, and drinking a couple of bottles of wine as well at the weekend, and you go on a diet, and then, you know, you stop the diet and that behavior is still there, you go back the takeaways and the wine or whatever, that weight is going to come back. So you have to kind of find a middle ground where you can enjoy that as part of the process, but maybe it's going to be, you know, one night of the week rather than two.
Hello there, friends. Welcome once more to the Happy Habit Podcast. I'm your loyal host, Matthew. Now, it might very well be a brand spanking new year with fresh starts and new beginnings and lots of change. But one thing is constant. Yes, the Happy Habit Podcast is here every Monday and Thursday. Almost, would you believe, almost 380 episodes in the Happy Habit Archive. Lots of brilliant interviews with some of the world's leading experts in the fields of health and wellness and motivation, inspiration and self-improvement all round. So do feel free to check out some of those amazing episodes. And if you're enjoying listening in, please like, subscribe and share with other people who are looking for some motivation and some education in 2024. A reminder too, we are now on Instagram and on YouTube if you fancy checking out the videos of these podcast episodes. Now, many of you will be embarking on this new year in an effort to shift some of that excess weight you accumulated over the last few weeks during the holidays and over the Christmas and New Year. Well, this episode today will certainly pique your interest as I'm joined by Sinead Cloherty. She is an Irish nutritionist, a health coach and an expert in making healthy eating easy, tasty and fun. She's mentored thousands of clients down through the years with thousands of followers on Instagram where she shares healthy eating tips. In this episode, I ask why we have such a complicated relationship with the food we eat. Expect to learn what sustainable weight loss is and the best way to go about it and how it differs from the approach dieters normally take. We discuss if we should be keeping track of what we eat and ask if eating while watching TV on the sofa is really a good idea. Discover what mindful eating is and how it can positively impact how and what we eat. From a nutritional standpoint, we explore the sorts of foods we should be looking to consume for a healthy nutritional balance. Plus, we talk about behaviour change and how it influences our ability to manage our weight loss. Well, Sinead, you are a nutritionist, a health coach and an expert in making healthy eating easy, tasty and fun. Can I start first of all by asking you, why is it we have such a tricky relationship with food? Why is it so complicated?
There's probably many different factors that come into it, you know, and obviously everyone's different. But I think, yeah, the dieting industry, I suppose, has definitely contributed towards that, because we've been given, you know, kind of misinformation, or I suppose what we thought was the right information at the time, and perhaps even what the scientists thought was the right information. So we've got all of this different advice from different, you know, groups and people, and a lot of the time that actually has led to, I suppose, an unhealthy relationship with food and people labeling foods as good and bad.
I spoke with a woman there recently who's a professor in nutrition and food politics, and she actually wrote a book all about food politics, and this was about the influence, the subversive influence that the big food companies have on people's consumption of their products. And the story she was telling me about some of the techniques that they use, the big food companies actually model their approach to getting their product into their customers' baskets in the same way as the big tobacco companies used to use in order to get their products into the hands of teenage smokers. So it's people who are consuming food are really up against huge forces when it comes to making or trying to make the right choices.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there's a thing called the bliss point with food as well, which these food companies use, which is the perfect mix of sugar and fat. But that's really addictive, actually. And that can be, you know, as addictive as cocaine, apparently, you know, according to scientists. So, and that's probably the likes of your Ben and Jerry's, you know, which a lot of people struggle to put the tub back in the fridge or in the freezer once you open it, you know, so that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's definitely, there's a lot more processed food available as well. And yeah, it's hard to know what's in your food. It's hard to know how to make the best choices, even the way food is marketed as well. Like some things are marketed as high protein or contains a source of protein, when in reality, if you look at the label, it's primarily a fat source, you know, so it's tricky at the moment for sure.
Tricky to say the least. Now, I know your mantra is one of sustainability when it comes to managing weight loss and healthy eating. What do we mean when we say sustainable, and how does this differ from the approach that dieters would normally take to weight loss?
So what happens when people normally go on a diet is that diet normally has an expiration date. And then, so you're only doing something for a certain amount of time, and then when the diet stops, your regular habits that you have when it comes to food, etc., they're all still there. So you usually revert back to that, and then often the weight regain comes. So when you're thinking about making a change when it comes to your food, realistically, you should be thinking, okay, is this something that I can sustain long term? Am I going to be able to sustain this change? Especially when it comes to weight loss. Like, you can make certain changes that are more short term, but you still will have to look at, you know, what are the habits and behaviors that have caused me to gain the weight in the first place, and am I addressing them? Because if you, for example, have a habit of you know, getting takeaway twice every weekend on a Friday and a Saturday, and drinking a couple of bottles of wine as well at the weekend, and you go on a diet, and then, you know, you stop the diet, and that behavior is still there, you go back to the takeaways and the wine or whatever, that weight is going to come back. So you have to kind of find a middle ground where you can enjoy that as part of the process, but maybe it's going to be, you know, one night of the week rather than two or something like that. That makes sense.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned behavior there, and looking at people's behavior in tandem with what they're consuming. The behavioural approach is more of a recent introduction into this whole weight management subject. And how important is it to look at behaviours in tandem with what you're eating?
I'd say it's the most important thing, because your behaviour is essentially your habits, which is what you're going to do every single day without thinking. And we all have habits, you know. It's like brushing your teeth. When you develop a good habit, you don't need willpower or motivation to get up in the morning and brush your teeth. You know, you just do it. So when it comes to food as well, it's important that you create new and better habits and change your current habits, because otherwise, if your goal is to lose weight or just to eat healthier, if you don't address the habit side of things, like, it's not going to be sustainable, and therefore your results won't be sustainable either.
And so then, when it comes to behavior change, how important is mindfulness as far as our habits are concerned? Do we literally have to track our behaviors as well as tracking the food that we eat?
Well, definitely you have to become aware of your behaviors, because, and this is quite funny actually, because a lot of the people that I work with mainly women, a lot of the women I work with initially, when they start to become aware of their behaviors, they never even realized some of the things that they were doing until they actually started becoming aware. When it comes to tracking your food, you don't necessarily have to track your food. So this, again, this will come down to the person, the individual. You know, some people have maybe an unhealthy relationship with food, and tracking their food could be a trigger for that. They could get too bogged down with the numbers in terms of like their protein or their calories, etc. And for some people, they're allergic to tracking their food, you know. So, you know, there's no point in trying to do something if you don't feel like you can confidently implement it as a habit, even if it's kind of temporary. So I have worked with women who they haven't tracked their food, but, you know, they would have an idea of what they're eating, you know, and we would go from there. Or a photo food diary works really well with some of the clients I work with. So they send me photos of their meals at the end of the day, and we work from that. But there are benefits to tracking your food, because it makes you aware of what's in your food and portion size. And it also allows you to have more flexibility as well. But also with the tracking apps that are out there at the moment, a lot of the information on them is actually really inaccurate. So you'll often find, like, if you search for something on, we'll say the most popular one, MyFitnessPal, like if you search for the nutritional information for an item, let's say, 30 grams of porridge oats or something, you might get 10 different results, you know, because it's a database and anyone can upload stuff on there. So that's obviously very kind of hindering for people. And often people will use these tracking apps to track their food, and they have no idea of the nutritional values of the food. How would they, you know, unless they studied nutrition, of course. And then they won't get the results because they think they're eating very little because the information is inaccurate on the app. And then they give up, essentially.
So people don't need to necessarily calorie count per se. It comes down to a more common sense approach whereby they look at the foods that they are consuming, or if they employ somebody, a coach like yourself, it's more of a visual inspection as to the content and the range of foods that they're eating, and also the proportion sizes.
Yeah, that all comes into it. Some of the women I work with would track their foods, but at the same time, like I have... You know, I obviously give my clients the nutritional values of most foods. So they're not relying on an app for that, if that makes sense. So they're not getting inaccurate information. So it's about re-educating people on what the actual nutritional content in the food is. And yeah, it is beneficial to track your food for a period of time, as long as I'd say you're working with the coach, because if you're just using MyFitnessPal itself, that information is not going to be accurate all of the time. So you're probably just getting more confused in the long run.
You mentioned some poor behaviors that lead to unhealthy eating. Can we talk about those? I heard you say before that you're not a fan of sitting on the sofa eating, because that can lead to mindless eating and you're not even aware of what you're consuming. You can get your a whole way through a box of Pringles in no time without even realizing it. I know you're a fan of sitting and eating at the table. Can you tell us about these behaviors that lead to healthier eating choices?
Yeah, so again, it just comes back to being aware that you are actually eating, because if you're not sitting at the table, if you're sitting on the sofa, and again, you know, this is more dependent on the person. You know, there might be some people who would be able to, you know, take, we'll say, a portion of popcorn and go and sit on the sofa, and they have their portion. But if you've got a big sharing bag of something and you're sitting on the sofa and you're watching a movie, you're not really registering that you're eating at the same time, you know, because you're probably focused on the movie, you know. So you can easily overeat that way. So if that was, you know, something that you were struggling with, kind of mindless eating, then, and a lot of the women I work with actually would often say that when they're making the dinner, this is when a lot of the mindless eating happens, actually. So they're snacking on bits of food while they're cooking the dinner, or they'll clear the kids, they'll eat the rest of the kids' dinner that was left over without even realizing it, you know, rather than putting it in the bin. You know, but they'll do that without realizing it. And it's only when they start to become aware that they realize that they're doing these things. So yeah, definitely sitting down at a table, like without distractions, is probably the best way to ensure that you don't eat mindlessly.
Does this mean you can't scroll on your phone when you're having your dinner either? I tend to do that a lot myself.
I mean, it's more if you, like, probably you're not going to feel as satisfied from your meal though, you know, because if your focus is elsewhere, do you know what I mean? And if you have a habit of eating fast as well, then that also comes into it. So if you have a habit of eating fast and you're distracted, you're not going to be able to focus on slowing down. And it takes about 20 minutes for us to feel full, you know, for that signal to get sent between the brain and the stomach. So, you know, if you're finishing your meal within 20 minutes, like, you could end up overeating as well. So
you must have seen me eating, because I eat fast as well. I'm breaking all the rules. Can I ask you, in relation to people's eating habits again, a lot of people are super disciplined for lunch and basically during the daytime. They eat salads and soups and all the rest, and they're brilliant. So they've gone the whole day from breakfast all the way through to tea time, and they've been terrific when it comes to their healthy eating choices. When they get home, the shoes come off, the tracksuit comes on, and they're on the sofa. And then the diet and the healthy eating goes out the window. What's happening here exactly?
Yeah, often in my experience, or from the women that I work with, it can be often kind of a habit. Or also it could be also stress. So a lot of people feel like, you know, when they come home, they're just kind of like, you know, now it's time to relax. It's time to have a little reward for getting through the day. You know, so, and that reward often comes in the form of food. So it could be a habit, but it also could be stress. So if you're, if in general you have a lot of stresses in your life, and your stress hormone is high, cortisol, then that does drive, you know, cravings, and it just drives that kind of urge to eat. So you will feel like reaching for maybe not the healthiest foods in the evening time. So it can be a mixture of stress or habit, really, or craving, which is often caused by stress.
So how do we combat that in that case? Is it a case then of addressing the stress rather than the unhealthy eating in the evening will then sort itself out?
Yeah, it could be. It just depends on what's driving it for the person. So if it could be just a habit someone has and they're not stressed at all. So then, like, that's something I would work on with someone through behavioral change coaching. And then if it's stress, you know, obviously you can't get rid of your stressors, you know, because often the women I work with will say it's work, it's the kids, you know. You're not going to be getting rid of those things out of your life, but it's more about, okay, how can we manage these better? Because food is a coping mechanism. You know, sometimes when we're happy, when we're sad, when we're stressed, and it's okay to do that sometimes, but it's when we do it all the time. And if it's your only coping mechanism, then it's going to lead to probably weight gain or, you know, possibly other health issues as well. So it's about finding other coping mechanisms to help you actually just deal with stress in general, rather than letting it build up.
How much of your holistic approach to helping your clients involves exercise, for example?
Yeah, I work with exercise is a part of it with everyone, you know, but we look at it from I suppose, a personalized approach. So, you know, whatever the person feels they can create a new habit with, you know, whether whether they see themselves, you know, walking 3 or 4 times a week, you know, consistently for many years to come, or whether they see themselves, you know, joining a gym and doing some strength training there as well. I'd always recommend strength training, especially for women, because it's so important in terms of even just, you know, your bones and preventing osteoporosis. But it's also really good for your metabolism as well. But definitely it's more about what the person is able to fit into their lives, you know, how many days they can incorporate exercise and what type of activity is going to work for them long term as well. So it will vary from person to person, but activity is a part of the process for everyone.
Again, we keep talking about this term of sustainability and sustainable transformation and change over the longer term. Does that mean then, using the term diet and all the associative connotations of that word, the short-termism of that word, does that mean using the term diet is not advised any longer? Or certainly you don't use the term diet?
Yeah, well, I guess the word diet is associated with you know, these things that you hear about, like the paleo diet or the keto diet, the, you know, the salad, the cabbage soup diet, you know, whereas my understanding of that term is just your nutrition intake. You know, when we say what's your diet like, it's, you know, that's what it really means, is your nutritional intake of food. But yeah, I mean, if you go on a diet, you know, and though, you know, it's normally associated with something being more short term, whereas, you know, you probably heard the phrase, it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle. You should be looking at making changes that are more sustainable long term, definitely.
And how do you judge or grade progress then in your clients then over the longer term?
So we use different measurements. So like, we would measure weight, obviously, but also body measurements. So like chest, waist, hip measurements, that kind of thing. Also, I have, when I'm working with someone, they will fill in a review form every single week as well, and that will measure where they're at as well when it comes to their mindset and different things, and just how they're feeling in their clothes as well. We do photos as well, different things like that. But you cannot rely on the scale alone. It's not an accurate indication of your progress, especially if you're only weighing yourself once a week, because your weight actually fluctuates day to day. So you should be weighing yourself every day and getting the average over the week and comparing the averages week to week. So that's another area where a lot of people fall down, actually.
Now, you take a bespoke approach to dealing with your clients on an individual basis, but in a very general sense, when it comes to our nutritional requirements, as far as food groups and nutrients are concerned, what should a healthy, balanced diet look like to people who are listening in?
Yeah, so the big one, and you'll hear me talk about this a lot, is protein. You know, usually we're not getting enough of it. And this is especially the case as well for women who are, you know, maybe going through menopause and that as well, because that's, you know, when you may have lost some muscle at that point already, you know, and you might continue to lose muscle as well. So just to prevent that and help with your metabolism, protein, most people are not getting enough of that. So that's the main thing I would say. And then the other thing then, yeah, I guess it's more, it does come back, it's more mindset that I see people struggling with. It's the all or nothing approach. It's not necessarily that they have a lot wrong with their nutrition, but, you know, they're really good for a couple of, like, 2 weeks, like super strict, super disciplined. And then they go the complete opposite way for many other weeks. So they're struggling to find that balance. But in terms of general nutrition advice for people who are listening in, I would say, yeah, protein is really important. And everyone will have a different protein goal depending on their own goals. and their age and their weight and height and everything. And also probably variety of plant foods as well. That's one where a lot of people need to improve on as well. So yeah, you might be eating vegetables, but you're probably eating the same vegetables every day. So there's no variety there. And the variety is really important for your gut health and your hormones as well. And they're all actually linked to weight loss as well and health.
Many people listening in will associate weight loss with fat loss and then demonize consumption of fat as a result. But we still need to consume fat in our diet. Can you talk to us about the healthy fats we should be eating?
Yeah, so most of us are not getting enough omega-3. So you have, you know, omega-3 and omega-6, there's omega-9 as well. And, you know, a lot of people would say that they take a supplement, but often it's not in the right quantities as well. So omega-3, I suppose, like the best sources really are going to be like your oily fish. If you're getting it from plant sources, it has to get converted in the body to the best form. And that process just has to go through an extra step as well. But oily fish would be really good. Generally, people are not eating too many fats, I would say. And often if they are consuming, if the diet is showing like high in fat, often it's because they're eating some foods that are also kind of high in carbohydrates as well. So it might be coming from pastries and that kind of thing, rather than things that they may be trying to avoid, like cheese, for example, which would actually be better because cheese has got protein in it. And it's doesn't, you know, the zero sugar in cheese. Yes, it does have fat, but it's okay to have a certain amount of fat. And usually when people do have too much fat, again, it's coming from these other types of foods that we probably need to look at rather than avoiding, you know, the cheeses and that kind of stuff, if that makes sense. But yeah, healthy fats would be like your nuts, oily fish as well, seeds, avocado is great as well, chickpeas even, and that kind of thing. They're all good sources.
Okay, so for many people listening in now, it's the start of the new year, and it's always the time of the year when people elected to make changes and adopt new habits in their lives. And one of those will invariably be a weight management or weight loss program. What are the do's and don'ts then for people who are listening in, and what should they be doing and what should they not be doing? And I suppose your experience will be based on looking at people who have made mistakes in the past.
Yeah, so I would say, like, think about what you have done before and, you know, why it hasn't worked. And, you know, try not to repeat the same thing again, because a lot of the time we can get caught up in this, if I could only stick to it, it works. But if you can't stick to it, you know, it doesn't matter anyway. If it doesn't fit in with your lifestyle, it doesn't matter if you lose, you know, a stone in a week on a keto diet, if you can't eat that way for the rest of your life, because you'll just keep continuing in that cycle of, you know, gaining and losing weight. But you have to develop a way of eating that is going to shouldn't feel so difficult. You know, you shouldn't be eating drastically different to what you are now. Yes, you will need to make changes, but it should actually feel easy enough or simple, because like that's one of the keys actually of behavior change, is that any change that you're going to implement should feel easy to accomplish. You know, if you were decided that you were going to train for a marathon, you're not going to go out and run 10K tomorrow if you've never ran before. You're probably going to start by, you know, a couple of minutes jogging and then walking and then jogging. You know, you're going to kind of increase over time or make more changes over time to get to your goal. So I would say, like, avoid these kind of diets that are not going to be sustainable for you long term. They don't fit in with family life, you know, maybe they're not personalized for you, especially if you've already done similar things in the past and it hasn't worked, like that's your sign that these are not going to work long term either.
And then for people then who have adopted or begin to adopt a new healthy regime and the first several weeks are great and they're seeing a difference, after a few weeks, people's enthusiasm and their motivation and discipline will inevitably wane. How do we help people in that situation? What tips would you have to help people find their motivation again and their discipline in order that they keep this going over the longer term?
Yeah, I would say like expect that to happen. You know, like you're never always going to feel motivated to do something. But I suppose a good way, it depends in what context you're talking about. For example, if you are creating the habit, this will be actually easier because, you know, when the habit is created, you won't feel like you need motivation. It just, you know, it's like if you're somebody who goes to the gym, or you're somebody who walks every day, you almost feel, you know, strange if you don't do it because it's become such a habit for you. But when it comes to making changes to your nutrition and that, yeah, your discipline, your motivation, it is going to wane at different points. But I would say, yeah, just expect that to happen, that you're not always going to feel like doing something, you know, and you just have to make the decision to do it anyway. And maybe thinking back to the reason why you're doing it. There's a really good phrase, easy decisions, hard life, hard decisions, easy life. And that's really true, because if we always take the easy route out, yes, it might be easy now, you know, to skip your walk or to just not cook the dinner to get that takeaway. But if that's consistently the choices you make over a long period of time, then later on in life, like you might have to deal with some difficult things if it's affecting your health.
And in addition, then people have the option of going to somebody, an expert then like yourself. So what kind of services would you offer people who are looking to make a sustainable change?
Yeah, so I found that like some people definitely need the handheld approach, and you know, they really need somebody to be there with them every single step of the way. They want to work on their habits. So that's where I offer personalized one-to-one coaching. And it, you know, it's not a good fit for everybody. And I would always speak to someone before I would invite them to work with me, just to make sure that it, you know, it's a good fit for both of us. So, you know, if somebody wants to get in touch, they can go on my Instagram and they can book a complimentary discovery call, you know, and we can see if that would be a good fit. So that's where I would use, obviously, I'd be working with someone on their nutrition. I'd also be using the behavioral change coaching, and then we'd look at lifestyle.
I also want to mention the fact that you offer courses
to people
want to achieve a degree of transformation in their lives. Can you tell us about these?
Yeah. So recently I did launch a program that you go through yourself. So it's not one-to-one coaching, but it's a video course that I created. So this would be more for people who feel like they maybe just need the education side of things. They need to be told what to do. They're confused with the information out there. They don't know what they should be eating. They don't know how much protein would be good, you know, what sources of protein and how to get that into their diet. And also perhaps they're just confused about everything, and they really need the education side of things, and to be able to just apply that. They're kind of people who can do that themselves. Because there are a lot of people out there like that as well, where they're just missing that one piece. So I created a video course for that takes you through, so you can go through it in your own time. And that takes you through, you know, how to calculate your maintenance energy requirements, your fat loss energy requirements. It also goes through if you did want to track your food, like how to do that accurately as well, you know, how to make progress without tracking as well, and protein and all of those different things as well. So that is also available. So
name your Instagram account, there's a link for that
there as well, and you can read more about it there as well.
Grand. And I will stick a link to that Instagram account in
Sinead
the show notes for this episode.
Nutrition.
Sinead, I've gone over my time. You're very good. I really appreciate you giving me some of your time on the podcast today. Hopefully, and no doubt people will have got some great tips and advice, given that will be going out at the beginning of the new year. And I know many people will be seeking to make the changes that we've spoken about in this episode today. But if people want to find out more about you, they can go onto the show notes of this episode and reach out to you directly via your Instagram and have a look at the courses that you mentioned just now. But for the moment, Sinead Clougherty, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. Really enjoyed chatting with you again.
Same. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for tuning into this episode of the Happy Habit Podcast. If you got any value whatsoever, all I ask for you to do is to like, subscribe, share with friends and family who you think might get some benefit from tuning in also, and leave the podcast a positive rating because it does help spread the message of what we're doing here. Until next time, stay happy.